This is an ABC podcast.
This is Baby Talk Podcast with Penny Johnston.
There is so much hope tied up in becoming a mum or a parent for the very first time. There's so much we want to get right, so many things that we think are going to be important before we become a parent, and so much of that that we have to let go for our own survival and mental health. And sometimes the wheels can just fall off. It might be something from our past, a terrible experience during birth, hormones, life circumstances. Hey, what about a pandemic? But perinatal mental health is so important to talk about because it can sometimes overwhelm the people that you think are doing fine, the people that you least expect to cave from an experience like that. And today's story is one that needs us all to recognise that even when everything looks like it should be perfect on the surface, there can be a lot going on behind the scenes. A reminder that we need to check in with new parents to really and properly ask if they're doing okay.
Then all these emotions came up from the birth, you know, like, would it have been better if I didn't have the cesarean? I don't know, all these things would come flooding into my head. And yeah, that's how my postnatal depression and anxiety took off. It felt like the baby blues just literally never left.
Well, today I'd like to introduce you to Jamie Seal. Well, hey, I'm going to let her introduce herself.
The way I introduce myself, my name's Jamie Seal and I'm a proud Wiradjuri woman, mother and registered nurse. My little girl's name is Lily. She's 15 months old now. My background's in intensive care and emergency care, but the last 2 or 3 years I've been working in the Aboriginal Health Service.
Tell me about becoming a mum.
So gosh, my partner and I, we've been together for 10 years next year and we've wanted to start a family. I've got a history of endometriosis and we thought that I would, you know, that we would run into some issues falling pregnant, but it didn't take us too long, only took us about 4 months and yeah, fell pregnant, had a pretty healthy pregnancy. A few issues with my liver, but otherwise that was monitored pretty closely and the liver specialist was happy, the obstetrician was happy. I gave birth last August, the 10th of August in 2020. I think the pandemic was just starting to ramp up a bit then, where COVID was quite new and we weren't really sure what was happening in terms of visitors for my partner Tom coming into the hospital, you know, to go and do our antenatal appointments. Also surrounding the birth as well, there was one stage where there was a possibility he wasn't going to be able to come with me. There was actually only one person allowed in the birthing suite at the time.
Oh,
no other family could come. So, my waters broke in the middle of the night and we had everything ready to go. Thought we had everything ready to go, I should say. but the only thing we didn't really plan for, which we look back now, and that was bringing Bub home. So, yeah, we arrived at the hospital in the assessment room and got placed on the CTG monitor to watch my contractions and my waters had only broken a little bit at home. So we were just so worried that, oh, we're probably going to be sent home again because I'd been in the birthing suite a few times with pre-labor contractions. So we thought, oh gosh, I really hope we don't get sent home again. Like, please be it, please be it. And the midwife said, darling, you're not going home without your baby. And we both just instantly relaxed thinking, oh, thank God, it's actually going to happen. Yeah. And we thought, oh my gosh, you know, this is, you know, so many emotions. And so eventually moved into the birthing suite. I was able to move around a lot more, had an internal, which I was then 5 centimeters. But Lily started to get a bit distressed. Her heart rate was bumping up and down. So they broke my water, like the rest of my waters manually, just to move things along a bit quicker. It's funny, this sort of happened, I suppose, because I had this big birth plan before, you know, while I was pregnant. And a week before I gave birth, I was like, no, I'm getting rid of the birth plan. I don't want a birth plan. There's too much stress around it. You know, I just want care with my placenta. So anyway, they break my waters manually. And that was part of my original birth plan because I thought, no way, that's way too invasive. But it ended up happening. So thankfully I was prepared for anything to happen and was accepting of that. So yeah, it ended up, didn't have any pain relief. She was starting to get more distressed. So they decided to put an internal fetal scalp monitor in. And, you know, that was also on my the old birth plan. No way, they're not going to put that. No, anyway, they've put the cord in, and I'm just, you know, petrified because I've got this cord dangling out of me and it's attached to her scalp, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, if I like move a certain way, am I going to rip some of her scalp off? Or like, you know, I just felt like I had to be so careful with this cord coming out of me because, you know, that was the way they were closely monitoring her heart rate rather than the CTG on my belly. So that was, you know, just having that there was just a bit scary because, you know, I was just so scared of something happening to her because of me, you know, I accidentally tripped on the cord or something like that. Anyway, one thing led to another, and she was still not happy. So next minute we're in for an emergency cesarean. Yeah. So it all just happened so quickly. And I mean, I labored for probably 5 or 6 hours, but once they announced the cesarean, it just happened so fast. Like literally within 30 minutes, she was with us.
Wow.
Yeah. So we were moved into the operating theater. I hadn't had any pain relief, so the contractions were coming and going, and the poor anaesthetist had to work quite quickly in between the contractions to get the spinal in while I'm sitting on the operating table. And, you know, they were so lovely, though. They were really accommodating and really lovely, looking after me really well. In walks the obstetrician, and I, you know, Tom and I were just like, oh, you know, we're sort of feeling, you know, so thankful he's finally showed up, because we went privately but delivered in the public hospital. So we didn't really know any of the hospital staff that were there. None of the midwives that were there, we didn't know anyone. So it was nice to just see that familiar face. And yeah, she came out healthy, could not find any cause for the distress.
Wow.
So yeah, he was just like, oh my God. When he first walked into the theatre, he was like, oh my gosh, Jamie, we didn't talk about a cesarean.
Oh.
And I was like, I know. And as a nurse, my background, I work with adults in an intensive care or emergency setting, and in Aboriginal health, you know, I don't know anything about childbirth or having babies. So that was, even I was like, I have no idea what's about to happen. You know, I know I'm about to have a big operation, but I didn't know sort of, you know, the recovery from it and what was involved, you know, no heavy lifting for 6 weeks, all of that. I just had no idea about.
Did it help or hindered, do you reckon, being a nurse? Was that sort of...
I think it hindered, because I knew so much, but at the same time, nothing at all about childbirth. You know, I knew about wound care and stuff afterwards, bleeding and all that sort of stuff, but nothing about how invasive a cesarean actually is, you know, like how many layers of skin are cut through, and, you know, the tissue and the muscle, feeling numb afterwards. Like, I had no idea about any of that. So yeah, that was a big surprise. But, you know, I was happy to have the cesarean, you know, with my plan, you know, whatever intervention needs to be done, we were trusting of our obstetrician for that, for him to make that decision. And yeah, I still don't mind that I've had a cesarean to this day. It's that's how this little girl wanted to come out.
Can't argue with
that's
that.
That's fine. No, I can't argue with that. And she's such an energetic little baby now. We just laugh because we think, you know, my waters were broken manually. She really was quite comfortable and just did not want to be poked and prodded. So she was like, you know, getting a bit distressed. And she's like, all right, just get me out of here.
Oh, my goodness. So now I know that a lot of mums, I mean, I'm pleased to hear that you at least had come to peace with the birth plan a week before it happened.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of mums get really disappointed if they, you know, had this idea of how it was all going to go, and, you know, like you were doing no pain relief, then it all went very medical. Did that sort of upset you after the event? I mean, I know at the time you just want things to happen and you just want a baby at the end, but did that hit you at all afterwards?
Yeah, it did. So my only plan with the birth was to keep the placenta. That was really important to me. So in Aboriginal culture, there's a ceremony of burying the placenta. It's very significant, and it connects us to our ancestors and to our country. So yeah, for me, that was really important to keep the placenta. We'd voiced that in our antenatal appointments to our awesome obstetrician. But obviously, I think maybe just with that barrier of going private and then delivering public, there's just that breakdown of communication. I don't know. But the placenta was thrown in the clinical waste bin. So unfortunately, I mean, look, our midwife got it out of the bin to show it to us. But I just thought, you know, look, I know what goes in those bins. And I just, for it to sort of just be so, you know, just to be thrown in the bin like that, I just thought, there was no care for it, or yeah, I just felt quite disrespected.
Yes.
And I've got this baby laying on my chest now, and while this is happening, and I just thought, oh, I just put it in the back of my head and said, no, I don't want it. And I just left it then and there. And I think that from then on, I sort of just had this sense of, loss of control. And then there was issues with breastfeeding. I really struggled breastfeeding. Lily had a good latch, but my supply just wasn't enough. And, you know, they say that that's not really an issue, that there is supply. It's, you know, stress and all these other factors that contribute to low milk supply. And I was so stressed, you know, I was so stressed coming home. The hospital experience wasn't very nice. It sort of just all trickled on after that. And yeah, then the cesarean stuff sort of came into my mind, like, oh, you know, I can't breastfeed. I couldn't deliver vaginally. You know, like I just felt like I couldn't provide for her. I tried so hard to breastfeed, exhausted every avenue, lactation consultants coming to our house, medication, supplements, everything. And yeah, it just didn't work. And that really affected my mental health quite significantly. And then all these emotions came up from the birth, you know, like, would it have been better if I didn't have the cesarean? I don't know, just all these things would come flooding into my head. And yeah, that's how my postnatal depression and anxiety took off. It felt like the baby blues just literally never left. You know, it took 6 months to get any support. So for 6 months, I was experiencing intrusive thoughts, paranoia. I basically lived in fear for that 6 months, first 6 months postpartum. And, you know, the connection with Lily wasn't established straight away. Nothing really came good until I sought help from Gidget Foundation. And yeah, they saved my life. And I'm so thankful that I was able to finally get the help I needed. And yeah, I think there's just so many things that, looking back, so many things could have been different. But I try not to focus on the negative things too much and just focus on the good things that are happening now. But yeah, just, you know, all of the postnatal checks that new mums have, I think it's 2 or 4 weeks, the first check for the baby. And, you know, it's just all about breastfeeding and checking how bub's going. And there's not much about mum. It's just, you know, I don't know. I filled out so many mental health forms, the K10 forms to check for postnatal depression and anxiety. And I don't know what my scores were, probably not high enough at the time. But I just, you know, I feel like no one really took me seriously. Between the postnatal checks with the child and family health nurses, going to the GP, Tresillian, Carotene, all these places that I sought help from, just I felt like it wasn't really taken seriously enough. And, you know, that's the thing with anxiety and depression as well, is some days you do have good days and other days are absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, when I saw these services on some days, maybe I presented well, but internally I was an absolute mess. There's so much work that needs to be done, I guess.
So, yeah. Jamie, when you said that you were seeking help, were you seeking help on the issues like breastfeeding or Lily's sleeping?
Yeah.
Or were you seeking help for mental health support?
Initially, it was for breastfeeding and Lily's sleeping and her reflux. But then it, you know, we would be going back to the GP like at least 3 times in 1 week.
Yes.
And I remember a GP, you know, telling my partner that just watch her for this, this and that. And my partner was, you know, obviously a brand new dad, and he was going through his own stuff, trying to adjust to being a parent. And he sort of didn't really know what to look out for from what the GP said. And, you know, it's not his fault at all, but just those visits we did have in the GP's room or at Tresillian, it's just the baby is just really looked at very closely. And I just sort of felt like, you know, when I was talking about not sleeping and just I'm so anxious to do anything, I'm crying all the time. Like I would be crying basically all day.
Yes.
You know, the anger that I would feel, like I just had postpartum rage. And yeah, no one sort of, I just, every time I would talk about it, it was kind of like, oh, yeah, you know, it's just adjusting to parenthood.
What happened to make you contact the Gidget Foundation, and how, yeah, was there an incident?
Yep. So one day I was at home with my little girl and my partner was out for work, and it was just a really difficult day, another difficult day, and I just had enough. I just completely broke down. Lily, she would only sleep in the carrier. Oh. So, you know, my body was aching every day. My shoulders, my hips, my knees, my feet were aching. I was in so much pain. And she just would not sleep. And I was always so angry, and I never hurt her, but this one day she was screaming, and I just wanted a break. I just felt like I had been on for so long. And yeah, I guess I was holding her quite tightly, and rocking her, I suppose, a bit too fast. But thankfully I was able to snap out of that fairly quickly, and I just put her in her cot and walked away. It was probably about, you know, 2 or 3 minutes of that happening. I just put her in a cot, walked away, and called my partner and just told him what's going on. And I was just, you know, absolutely bawling my eyes out. And he dropped everything at work and started coming home. And in the meantime, I called a hotline just to sort of help me get through that moment, because I could hear Lily screaming in the bedroom. She was safe, but I just felt so overwhelmed and so alone and scared that I was going to do something. I called this hotline, and they calmed me down and helped me just talk to me until my partner Tom got home. And then that afternoon I just was like, God, something needs to be done. I need to get help. This cannot go on any longer. So I did a Google search, and Gidget Foundation came up. It was free. The help that I did receive previously was from my GP. Did actually refer me on to a private psychologist, but we weren't in the right financial to actually access that. And I knew one or two sessions wasn't going to be enough. It was up to $200 a session. And as a nurse, I know that there's free help out there. Just the wait list is so long. I got onto Gidget, and I think I waited a couple of months to see them. But, you know, they had a Facebook page called the Gidget Virtual Facebook page set up that, you know, I joined. And it was just so nice to read other stories of other mums and dads commenting on this Facebook page, and just to know that I wasn't alone in things, you know, while I was waiting to see the psychologist at Gidget Foundation.
There is such great comfort in knowing that someone else has been through the same thing.
Yeah, definitely. There really is. And I never made any posts or anything, but just scrolling through that Facebook page, and I think, wow, like, yep, that's me. Yep, that's me.
Yep.
I reckon I have postnatal anxiety and depression. I have to. Like, this has been going on for 6 months, and it's not right. Like, these women talk about the same thing as what I'm going through, and they've had therapy or they're medicated now. And I was just so excited to get that appointment with Gidget. I could not wait.
And there's something about naming it as well that sort of almost calms it down a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally.
So did you end up needing to have medication, or was just having that counselling enough?
Yep. So I did therapy for, gosh, I couldn't put a, I'm not sure how long I ended up doing therapy for before medication, but I was put on medication after a little while of therapy, and it was needed. I started having, you know, the intrusive thoughts were getting in the way of me getting out of the house. I was scared that something would happen to Lily, that I would, you know, I'd just be driving, and I was scared that I would just like, oh, what would happen if the brakes just stopped working right now? Like, oh my gosh, like, you know, and I would just think of these crazy things in my head. And that would happen all the time. You know, if I'm out walking with her, oh my gosh, it's summertime. What if like a red-bellied black snake comes out? You know, I'm in so much pain. What happens if I can't run fast enough? Or, you know, and I just have all these crazy situations in my head. And yeah, that was the point where I'm like, yeah, we need medication to help.
But I'm sure that your friends and people that know you'll go, you sound so cheerful and together. Mm. And
yes.
That's not helpful when you are in the midst of that sort of spiral inside yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And my family had no idea what I was going through initially till I saw Gidget and was able to acknowledge what was actually going on. But yeah, no one had any idea what was happening.
Was there anyone else that was helpful amongst your friends and family while you were going through that?
Look, the only people that were really great was obviously my partner Tom and my auntie. She would come over and she'd bring some food for us. She'd come over and just do the dishes, and she would just come and sit with me, and she wouldn't stay for too long. She doesn't have kids herself, but she just got it. I don't know, she's incredible. But yeah, I've got my auntie and Tom who were just amazing. Yeah. My mum, she was also great. She lives so far away. She lives in the Hunter Valley. And just the travel for her to come down, and I felt bad saying, you know, oh, mum, like, I need help. Like, I need a break. I would feel bad because, you know, she needs to work. And I just felt really bad pulling her away, you know, with the travel coming down to Sydney. So I just didn't really tell her much about my mental health stuff. Yeah, it was more just with the struggles with Lily sleeping and feeding.
You know, isn't it crazy that something as simple as doing the dishes has such an effect on your mental health?
It really does. Oh, my goodness. It really does. And I look back at when one of my girlfriends had a baby a while ago. And, gosh, I remember we would go over to her house and just go and sit there and just catch up with her. And, you know, I actually apologized to her when Lily came to the world because I was like, I'm so sorry. I never did anything when we came over, when your baby was first born. I had no idea. And she was like, no, it's okay. Like, you don't actually get it until you have a baby yourself. People don't get it until you have a baby of yourself. Like, once we got help from Gidget, that's when I was like, oh my gosh, we can get a cleaner. That would be so helpful. Take that mental load off, because it's that mental load as a mum that, you know, you've always got stuff on your head, whether it's, oh, we're running out of nappies, or we need to do the grocery shopping, the milk's about to run out. You know, just all of those things that add so much pressure onto parents or mums especially.
Yeah, that mental load is enormous. So, Jamie, knowing everything that you know now, how would you approach a second birth?
Look, I'm definitely not going through that journey again. Yeah, I'm pretty firm about that. I never want to go through that again. Yeah, it was really traumatic. I mean, gosh, if it were to happen, we would do so many things differently. I don't even know where to start. We would literally do everything differently.
Yeah. That's also important for us to know that, you know, this is really serious. And even though that you've spoken about it so comprehensively and eloquently, it has obviously taken its toll.
Yeah, it has. And I'm one of four kids. I come from a family, like, there's heaps of us. I've got lots of cousins. And I always thought I'd have two or three kids, but it shook me to my core. And yeah, I never want to go through it again. As much as I get really clucky when I see babies, I think, oh my gosh, no, no, no. I love the toddler stage. I absolutely love it. I love the tantrums, manageable, but you know, she can communicate to us and we can communicate with her. And when she was a newborn, it was just, God, everyone was screaming and crying and like fluids going everywhere. And it was just, there's a lot more control now.
Oh my goodness. What a terrible question to ask. I'd like to thank Jamie for answering it so eloquently. And I guess giving us all a chance to understand just how profound her birth experience was and how difficult it was for her. It's interesting that when we spoke a few weeks ago to birth doula Gabrielle Nancaro, part of her work is to make sure that a woman's next birth is going to be a great experience as well.
So it's not about how that baby was born or what her hopes were going into it. It was that during the birth she felt held and supported and seen and heard and not rushed. And they're the things that really help lessen any trauma. So yeah, hiring a doula, it doesn't make you immune to trauma, unfortunately, but we do our best to help you emerge from birth feeling positive about your story, happy, empowered, and if there is going to be another baby, without fear for your next birth.
The mistake in Jamie's birth story is really so profound and something that could have been so easily avoided. So much so, it's really something that I've thought about almost every day in the time since I recorded this interview with Jamie and talked about her birth story. And we all wish, I'm sure, Jamie, Lily and her partner all the very best for their future as a family together. Now, the Gidget Foundation was the organisation that helped Jamie, and I will put a link to Gidget on the Baby Talk website, but of course they can easily be found online. And a reminder that last week on Baby Talk, we talked about the difficult situation of parental burnout, not something that is necessarily recognised here in Australia as a psychological condition.
So the first one to appear is the exhaustion from the parental role. So this exhaustion can manifest on an emotional level or on a cognitive level or on a physical level. So for example, parents can say, my battery is low, or when they wake up, they're still tired. Another symptom is the overload and loss of pleasure from parenting. And the parents are unable to handle being a parent anymore. They are like overwhelmed and they no longer have pleasure from parenting.
Elaine Gartland and her podcast about parental burnout is available on the Baby Talk website with all the other podcasts we have online at the moment. It's easy to find. Just search Baby Talk, one word, and you'll find it. I'm Penny Johnston. I'll see you next time on Baby Talk.
ABC Baby Talk is a weekly podcast on ABC Digital Radio, wherever you get your podcasts and on the ABC Listen app. Like us on Facebook to find out as soon as a new episode is ready. Just search for ABC Baby Talk.